Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour. We got a couple minutes late start tonight, but that's because we had a backlog of shows. Hope you are enjoying the shows on BBS Radio, where we strive to bring you the truth, and definitely that's what we do on Evident Footprints. Lots of news going on. I just want to bring mention to the fact that the state of, I believe it's Wyoming, has just basically stomped their feet and told the federal government to stay out of their business. There's a local sheriff that got a judgment against the federal government, and this sheriff, as we know about sheriffs, they're the law of the land in their specific county. And this sheriff was not going to allow the federal government to come in and violate constitutional law, constitutional principles, and violate his constituents' civil rights. So we are having precedents set all over the country. Also, the state of Oklahoma has rejected quite a bit about the North American Union and this SPP highway designed to go straight up the central artery of the United States on Route 35. So we're having some people sort of kick up a little bit of dirt and a little bit of mud, and that's good news to hear about that. I've been getting email from around the world, gotten some email from Brazil, Paraguay, of all places, British Columbia. Mike, thank you for your kind email. I will look into your suggestion about a possible host. I should say guest. I am the host. just so many nice emails from people around the country enjoying the show, enjoying the truth coming out, and we are going to continue that tonight with two people. It's not often that I have two guests on simultaneously, but this is a couple who are the publishers of the Idaho Observer. I have known them now for well over a year and a half. I have been writing for the paper for about that long, and we are feverishly working on getting the paper out tomorrow. And we have a couple of new Three Stooges articles that are coming out. One is about the second half of the, or what we would call part two of the John McCain saga. And then I've got an introductory piece to what's coming on Barack Obama. And so we may talk about that a little bit tonight, but we are going to be talking about something very dear to our guests' hearts, and we're going to share some news from around the country, some news that's not making the mainstream. With that, I would like to introduce tonight's guests, publishers and editors of the Idaho Observer, Ingrid Castle and Don Harkins. How are you folks tonight?
Well, we're doing wonderful, actually. Feel a little more relaxed after we found out that the printers cannot do our print of the paper until tomorrow afternoon, so we don't feel quite so pressed, you know. That's the way things go. But
yeah, we have a bit of a reprieve, as it were. Even though we're a little bit late this month, we are putting together a really great paper that has an awful lot to do with the kind of the tail end of the part one of the Ron Paul Revolution, and we're kind of entering phase two at this time.
Okay. Now, do you want to go into that right now, or do you want to tackle that a bit later?
Well, it's rather exciting to me because I've been involved in activism now for the last 15 years, and for the most part, we have always been reacting to them. And when I say them, I think everybody in the listening audience knows who I'm talking about. It's the unseen forces that seem to be guiding the policy and the direction that this country is taking. And for the most part, we're reacting to them. But since, 17 months or so ago, Ron Paul's announcement that he's going to run for the Republican bid for the presidency in 2008, a lot of things have been changing. A lot of things have mobilized. The good people of this country that have been kind of isolated and feeling like they don't have a voice and they're being stomped on all over the place by the government have kind of united and have infiltrated party politics, Republican Party politics, at the precinct level and have mobilized a dramatic outpouring of freedom, feeling, and just changing the direction of this country through party politics. And I think that none of us really thought that that was possible, but it's really going forward now, and the reactivity that we're experiencing just by our mere presence as a conscience, say, at this time, because it's the operant party, the Republican Party, has been overwhelming, and I believe that we're really scoring points and winning friends and influencing people in a dramatic way.
Well, that's good news. For those listeners out there that weren't aware that Ron Paul still was in the campaign, the news came out, about a week and a half ago that Ron Paul...
It was exactly 7 o'clock on the evening of June 12th, which was the evening that we had scheduled for all of the delegates arriving from all over the state of Idaho into our county, because that's where the convention was this year, to discuss parliamentary strategy for the convention the following day. So it really kind of left us a bit in a tailspin because we'd been plotting and scheming and bringing a lot of things together, and suddenly our candidate wasn't there. And that initially had us very perplexed, as you can imagine, but we showed up at the convention the next day as ourselves, as our honorable selves, and the magic that happened as a result of that is something that could be the focus, I suppose, of this program, but we've got plenty of other things to talk about as well.
Yes, I just wanted to mention that I got word that it was a death threat, not just to Ron Paul, but to his whole family. These are the tactics these people are using to dissuade people from running for office in the land of the free. This is what's going on. So I thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, we hadn't heard anything about a death threat. What we had heard in about a week in advance was that under no circumstances was the Republican machine going to allow Ron Paul to speak at the Republican convention for September 1st through 3rd in Minneapolis, and that based on that, he decided to suspend his campaign. And like I said, however that ended up coming about, I believe that it's prompted wave two of the Ron Paul revolution in a way that is going to be heard around the world eventually as Americans begin to respond to the message of freedom and the principles that the founders had envisioned for this country.
Yes. Well, that's good news. And you'll keep me posted on what's going on there, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
We can't quite help ourselves because we're sort of in the middle of all that.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, he started the campaign for liberty right away. It kind of morphed into that. And I think a lot of people need to be real clear. He did not completely beg out. He suspended his campaign. So for many of us, the fact that he has this big gathering at the Dome going on in Minneapolis right alongside the Republican convention, and the fact that John McCain is not a qualified candidate for president, and many people, you know, feel like they're being pressured to vote for him, more and more dirt's coming out on him as you've been doing your research, and that information's getting out along with you know, the POWs, the families of POWs and MIAs, you know, that are vocal about what a traitor John McCain has been to Americans. And so as this dirt keeps continually coming out, now that we have the Internet and alternative radio like the show you have, Don, more and more people are waking up. And so, you know, there is actually some maybe remote, but a likely possibility that Ron Paul could take the Republican nomination.
Yes.
There is that possibility still, believe it or not. And but, you know, all is not lost. I mean, we have a lot of people that learned so much, especially here in the Northwest with the Washington and Idaho state conventions, also in Texas and Oklahoma. There's huge wins all over through the Republican conventions of people, you know, becoming precinct committeemen and then moving on to become delegates at their state conventions and totally being the conscience for the Republican Party there for the state. And it was evident very clearly in the Washington State Convention, where right near the end of that convention, when the Ron Paul delegates introduced a resolution to put a stop to the national ID, the McCain henchmen, or whatever you want to call them, they told all their people to leave, thinking that they wouldn't have a quorum. Well, they lost so many of their people that they did have a quorum, even though the Ron Paul delegates that came comprised about 40% of all the delegates. They lost a huge amount, and because they were actually told to vote against anything the Ron Paul people introduced, and they're voting against things like Second Amendment rights, pro-life issues, and it totally, they got so disgusted. They were watching this whole sham of a convention. They were violating rules, you know, basic laws and of how these things are supposed to operate, and it was an embarrassment for many of the party faithful, and so they stuck with the Ron Paul people, and pretty soon they had to, you know, the McCain bosses, they called their people back because they went on with business and they were going to continue passing resolutions that are of a benefit to the American people and would be incorporated into the Republican Party platform of Washington State. And many of the platform changes, I think everyone should know that the Ron Paul delegates have been instrumental in changing many of the Republican Party platforms in the various states to the point where McCain's platform is literally at odds with their state's Republican Party platforms. So, you know, even at the national convention, that could be raised, that how can you vote for a candidate that's at odds with your Republican Party platform of your state?
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I read somewhere or I heard from someone that there was possibly a lawsuit that was going to be filed by the delegates that felt that there were possibly something like sunshine law violations. In other words, these ad hoc committee decisions had been made prior to arriving at the convention so that they could try to just sweep in everything under the table, so to speak, and just move on from item to item with no discussion or no possibility of having their intentions thwarted. And,
well, in Washington, the rules by which the convention was going to be governed were altered by executive committee outside of the convention illegally and in abeyance of the bylaws, I might add, a couple of days prior to the convention. So coming into the convention, the rules had changed in a way that would make it very, very difficult for Ron Paul delegates to get selected. And in Nevada, for instance, the ballots of the delegates were coming in 7-1 in favor of Ron Paul, and so they just shut the convention down. And that was the 26th of April in Reno, and that convention is about to reconvene on the 28th of June, and probably, possibly, without even the Republican Party leadership, because a quorum is likely to be extant when they do reconvene. And then on the 16th of May, the Hawaii Convention, the Republican Party leadership, having learned from what had happened in Nevada, came in with a scripted convention. Boom, 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 convention's over, McCain's our man, and away we go. When the Washington Convention came, again, like I said, they had changed the rules to bamboozle a McCain nomination, and whether or not a lawsuit is going to be filed, the parliamentarians who have analyzed the events of the Washington Convention have found about 165 different procedural and bylaws violations that had occurred during that two-day period. And whether a lawsuit comes or not, I'm not certain whether that's actually going to transpire, because let's face it, the Republican Party is a private organization. That means that any lawsuit is a civil function. There's no laws, say, no criminal laws that can be attached to it. Plus, you couldn't really get an attorney general or a state attorney to prosecute such a thing. And we're looking at these things being 2 years out before there's any kind of a decision. But what has happened that is writ very, very large in the minds of independent people who are part of the process and believe in the process is that they now realize that the system is closed, that it only appears open so long as your vote and your voice agrees with the direction the leadership is deciding to take the party. And even many of the delegates that were supporting McCain, they agreed, wholeheartedly, that theirs was not a perfect candidate, but the party had chosen him, and so they had the choice, pretty much, of supporting the party and supporting the candidate, supporting Ron Paul and dividing, therefore weakening the party, or just staying home and shutting up. And when they saw all of this in action, there are several, I would say, both at the Washington Convention and at the Idaho Convention, both of which are conventions that I personally attended, as a witness, I say, not as a delegate, about 20% of the party faithful realized what was going on, and they began asking us questions, because they came into both of these conventions believing that Ron Paul supporters are just a bunch of poor, disenfranchised, libertarian atheists that don't really count. And when they found out that we are principled, that we stand for principle, and that we really want what's best for the country, they began to listen, they began to pick up our literature, and they began to really have a lesson in civics that is going to be carried into their political lives for the rest of their political lives, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Just in a closing comment from my part, when I think of an election as a supposed constitutional process that should be covered by some legal stipulations of some sort, in other words, be protected by law, the fact that they could go in there and create a predetermined outcome before the actual event took place is a fraud. It is a crime. Maybe what they should have is a criminal investigation. I don't know what your feelings are about that, but that certainly could be something in an emergency writ be brought before the Supreme Court.
Well, I view both Republican and Democrat Party politics as organized crime. And if
me
look
too.
At the way, and if you look at the way the party chairmen for the several states and even the chairman of the county parties, the way they behave, the way they organize their little universe around them, it is very classically organized criminal behavior. The only difference between the Cosa Nostra and Democrat and Republican Party leadership is this pretense that it's a political party. That's really the only thing. And ultimately, the end results are the same, that you organize people around you to accomplish various schemes that benefit certain members of the organization at the expense of everybody else. And
mm-hmm.
And so while I agree with you 100% and wholeheartedly, the problem is with this system, and we get into government, which is itself an organized criminal venture, to get a state attorney or a U.S. Department of Justice attorney to take a criminal case on for racketeering or whatever we could charge them with, is really, really unlikely. And not only that, getting them to be able to prosecute it is unlikely because they're complicit. So It's a great notion. It's absolutely appropriate, but practical is not really the key. And I think that what we're showing here is people are seeing this loud and clear in Technicolor, and the Win Friends and Influence People category of the Ron Paul Revolution is gaining in leaps and bounds.
Okay. I want to
add that one of the things that I think is really important to understand is that we have a very broken court system. The recent Supreme Court rulings are fairly shocking. We reported on some of those in the March edition of the Idaho Observer regarding the citizens' right to be able to sue the manufacturer of pharmaceutical drugs or medical devices that are faulty. And it was basically ruled that if the government approves of the product, just the initial product, I mean, they could change the formula, they could do all kinds of stuff, there could be problems with the product, but if the FDA approves the medical device or the drug, you have no recourse. You could die as a result of the product, but you have no legal recourse. And that, I mean, this is our Supreme Court. So with that in mind, you know, we were trying to, at the very get-go with We the People and Jim Condit, they wanted to, in fact, they gathered a representative from all 50 states in the Clean Elections lawsuit. And that was really needed to happen before these primaries. Well, of course, that pretty much fell on its face because the whole thing is that we don't have a Supreme Court that functions for the people. They are functioning for, you know, the system that we have, the corruption that we have. So we saw the results in New Hampshire where there are very small little towns. The whole towns voted for Ron Paul. Their votes weren't counted. Even though they had paper ballots, the transportation from where they cast their votes to where they're actually being counted, there was no security. The boxes would come in insecure boxes, recycled boxes. I mean, they could be switched out very easily. I mean, Bev Harris showed these vans that were escorted by the police that looked like they were driven by thugs. They were all dark vans. The votes went into these vans, easily could have been switched out in the vans and then taken to where the votes were counted. And in our own county, I think people should know, 24% of the whole state is supposedly for Ron Paul. But just in our county, I mean, to any observer of what the results of our primary was, they said 30% voted for Ron Paul. Well, about every other house has a Ron Paul sign. You ask about anyone on the street who they voted for, Ron Paul. There are a few Obama people, but most people voted for Ron Paul. It's very hard to find someone that voted for McCain unless they're a party faithful and were actually at the convention. And we have a Ron Paul person that got won in the primaries for county sheriff, as well as county commissioner, and it was literal landslides. We're talking about over 90% of the votes, but they want us to believe that those people that voted for Cornell Razor for county commissioner and Daryl for sheriff, those people, 80% of them at least, voted for McCain. Now, I don't, you know, I pointed this out to people, and they actually never really thought of it that way, and now they realize that we have vote fraud in our own county.
Yes, this, I saw the video of the removable tape. You could take the tape off the box and put it back on, and it didn't lift any cardboard, which is really the sign of a high-quality tape. And then they had, people had access to these so-called safe places where they were keeping the ballot boxes. And there's the issue of loading the box before it even arrives to the polling place. In other words, they could have had ballots put in there just in case somebody actually physically counted them. There's been enormous documentation on video of multiple votes cast by the same person. I saw 20 minutes of video in Texas someone voting literally 20 minutes straight for Mitt Romney. He cast 80 ballots. And this is all on video. This is the type of corruption that's out there, and that should disqualify the candidate, in my estimation. When that kind of fraud takes place, it should be an automatic disqualification, just on the basis of having documentation of it right there before your eyes.
Oh, let me also say something. This is really, really revealing about the process, even with inside the convention. I was fortunate enough. We had a really marvelous convention in Washington, and I was able to be connected by radio. There were 15 radios. I happened to have one, and another person had one in the booth inside, and the rest of them were leaders in the parliamentary processes going on the floor. And so I was connected to what was going on there and listening, and it was really quite revealing. At one point, this actually happened, and this is going to be of tremendous value to your listeners, because this just really epitomizes, I think, the extent to which these people were willing to go to make sure that the McCain preconceived nomination would occur. And that was at the point when the polling was taking place and the ballots were being cast inside the convention for delegates to choose for national. I believe it was Snohomish County, which is just north and east of King County, which is where Seattle is, was a Ron Paul top-heavy county. And the ballots were cast, and the people were casting them, would then place them in a box, and then this group of people we called the Wolf Pack, which was a bunch of young, extremely sharp and well-dressed neocons. They were absolutely rabid. I mean, you can just imagine what kind of guys they were. But they were with the National Republican Party. They were in charge of the balloting. They were in charge of running all the spreadsheets, and they were in charge of a lot of stuff that made sure that the election or that the convention went a certain way. Well, I was listening on the radio, and the ballots for Snohomish County were cast. They were being picked up, and then the Wolfpack members that were taking the ballots dropped them on the floor, and they spilled on the floor, and then they picked them up and put them in a garbage can. And I listened as the Ron Paul people, the parliamentarians that were kind of running the show and running the floor, motioned, and it was seconded, that the vote tally be held in abeyance until the ballots could be pulled out of the garbage can. Wow. That was revealing. If you want to understand the depths to which the Republican machine is willing to go to ensure that this preconceived notion of a closed system, J.S. McCain III, nomination, there you have it, right there. They dumped ballots in the garbage, and through the parliamentary process, a motion had to be advanced and seconded to get those ballots out of the garbage so they could be counted. Wow.
Incredible.
Yes.
Well, you keep us posted. We could go on and on with this. I know there are some other issues that we wanted to cover, and some of those are, you know, this rash of vaccinations, that these mandatory vaccinations that are being implemented around the country. I'm hearing of people who don't get vaccines for their kids. The kids are going to be expelled from school. They're not going to be able to go to school, or the parents are going to be jailed with daily fines. These types of stories, not to mention some of the issues that come about, and you alluded to that already, Ingrid, in terms of the exculpation of any liability on the part of the pharmaceutical companies, just on the basis of having these drugs initially approved by the FDA, when there is no significant testing at all, if any, is done on many of these drugs. And
right. Well, actually, there's very short trial periods. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars to go through the testing process to have them FDA approved, which anyway, it's out of sight for most people. I mean, small timers, you know, that are trying to get their nutraceuticals approved by the FDA. But anyway, the bottom line with the vaccine thing is people need to not only educate themselves, they need to know their rights and responsibilities as citizens in a republic. And that's why the Ron Paul Revolution is so important to me, because I frankly get really tired of hearing the stories of people being abused, their rights being violated, children being forcefully vaccinated, adults not knowing their rights and allowing themselves to be intimidated or you know, bullied into being vaccinated and suffering the consequences. I hear for so many people that are disabled in one way or another, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. The number of compromised people in this country, and children especially, I mean, the special education, you know, certificate that, you know, teachers go to get a teaching certificate, and the jobs out there aren't for teachers as much as they are for special education teachers, that they are in such high demand. And anyway, it's a huge issue. But what I do first, you need to be really clear that you do not want to be part of medical experimentation, and that's what these vaccines represent. But even beyond that, they literally do so much damage, and it's not just the immune system, it's to the whole nervous system and your whole spiritual connection. And I mean, I can't describe, you know, enough in a short radio interview, but our website, vaclib.org, has a lot of information. You can go to vaccinetruth.com. It's a networking site. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is in Ohio, in your state, Don. She's an osteopathic physician. What that means is she's actually had 4 years more training than the average MD, and she just came out with her book, Saying No to Vaccines. And it's, I just got it in the mail today. I was fairly excited because I've been waiting for 2 months. And it's a huge manual, and it's a brilliant compilation. It's a resource guide for all ages. And she gives you not only all the reasons that everyone that's listening should clearly make a choice to just say no, she gives you a history of mandatory vaccination, just how dangerous they are, and goes through all the different ways you can exempt yourself from participation for schools, healthcare, military, and other special circumstances. And many people have a difficult time saying no. I mean, the pressure is on, for sure. And, you know, frankly, when I hear of schools that bully people into having vaccines and threaten to expel them or take their children away for child neglect, things like this, personally, I wouldn't put my children in school today. They need to look at the curriculum, and I've counseled people many, many times that, are you sure you want to put your children in school? Have you looked at the curriculum? Have you been to the school and been there as an observer? Have you ever done substitute teaching? If you actually are a participant in the school, you'll see that the whole curriculum is corporate controlled. This is not about raising functional, discerning, responsible adults. It's about raising robots for the New World Order, literally. There's correct answers and incorrect answers, and the correct answers are mostly reiterating much of corporate propaganda that's part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Fluoride is good for you. Vaccines save the world from smallpox and polio. You know, we go outside of our borders and fight these wars on other territories for freedom. I mean, on and on. I mean, I can go on. There's many mantras. In fact, we had many of these mantras that were taught in schools on the front page of the Idaho Observer for the May edition, which I'm still selling because people really liked it, where Don touched on some really important issues regarding the indoctrination going on with our school system. So, and, you know, now we're trying to reach adults that have many of these programs, and it's really difficult to undo some of the programming that they were taught from an early age on up, because these become what we call foundational beliefs. And when you start cracking some of those foundational beliefs, it's like they don't have a sense of who they are, and the world around them starts crumbling. And it's very difficult for many people, because there's a whole sense of what's okay, their sense of security is being dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like going through stages of a grieving process. You know, the death of a loved one. Well, you know, the parental government is not necessarily the parent that you thought that government was. You know, I mean, the government that does no can do nothing wrong, helps its citizens. You know, any kind of disaster relief. I mean, they're there to help you, protect you. No, that's a myth, and mm-hmm. that's difficult for many people that went to public schools, because that whole concept is drilled into them of the beneficent government and experts. We really can't think on our own. We need to be funneled into a tunnel of focus and become an expert in something, and we certainly can't know about anything else except our specialty. And so when you start pigeoning people into just one area of understanding, it's very easy to manipulate those kind of people, because you can show them something that seems very logical and right in front of your face, and it's like, well, I don't understand that area. I'll have to ask an expert. Just like with the Twin Towers and 9/11. I mean, you'll talk to people that, you know, are public school educated, and, you know, it's right in their face. You know, this is clearly, you cannot get a solid steel beam structure to fall into powdered rubble due to burning jet fuel. I mean, this is just defies all logic. But you talk to someone that's been, you know, from public school and to college, and they have a good career, and to say that to them can really shatter their whole belief system, and they would rather defer to, the Institute of Technology or whatever, MIT, and what their statement says. If an expert or the 9/11 Commission says this is the way it happened, and NPR and, National Public Radio, or, you see it on TV and that's the truth, you know, as they want you to believe it, they're gonna defer to that because it's safer. It's more comfortable.
Speaking of 9/11, I recently got to see Dr. Judy Wood's research and her analysis of the whole scene there at Ground
Right.
Zero, and I saw images of twisted, bent in half steel beams. I mean, this is impossible to be caused by jet fuel. In fact, if a jet fuel burned at what they're saying it did, at the temperature it said it did, you wouldn't be able to fly a plane. All the planes would melt in the sky.
Yeah.
Well,
this is true. But then the other thing that I believe she's raised and other people is several blocks away. The incinerated cars on the bridge, you know, where did that come from?
Well, she, now, from the beginning of 9/11, I have been saying, and I have written this, and I have definitely talked about this on other radio shows as well as my own, that I sense that they used directed energy weapons, likely from space, and she has now come to that point where she's seeing the anomalies found in the Hutchison effect, where there is levitation of some cars. Some cars were just turned upside down, and those cars were not scorched. Yet many of the cars that just sat there and didn't actually levitate or were moved from one point to another, not from the force of the blast, or the building coming down, but from the force of the energy weapon that was used. It is so far beyond the understanding of the average individual that, you see these images on TV, you see the images in videos, and it doesn't sink in. It's so far beyond belief that people can't imagine that our government, in collusion with other foreign governments, and there's at least one other government that's involved in it, and I think you know who I mean.
Right, but, you know, one of the things that still astounds me is when they found human bone fragments on the top of the Deutsche Bank, that was a neighboring building. I mean, this is way high up. Here there's human bone fragments, and the family members, you know, thought it was so disrespectful, you know, just to treat the remains of their loved ones, you know, as so much rubble. But, you know, even though that was in the mainstream news, nobody really brought up the real issue. How in the hell did these, you know, bodies become so fragmented, and there were actual little teeny pieces of human bone on top of a bank years later?
Mm-hmm. And if you think, you know, Dr. Wood talked about the white smoke. Now, white smoke is usually caused by steam. It's a moisture type of fire. Any fire, if you take a piece of wet wood and throw it into a burning fire, it will release white smoke until all the moisture is burned. Well, you have miles of water pipes and restrooms and sinks, and so you have all this water in the building, and the immediate, instantaneous transformation that took place could not possibly turn all of that into steam, but that's exactly what happened, you see, which again says that there's a high energy beam. Now, interesting, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent with that, whenever there is any type of nuclear or misunderstood type of high-tech energy release, there is a time-space tear in the fabric of what surrounds our planet and our reality. And there was an instant manifestation of spiritual entities that came into the proximity of the buildings and the smoke and the billowing dust and all of that. It's even there in the pile of rubble that sat in a pile after they basically cleaned it up and were getting ready to remove it from the site. You could see these demonic faces in that. They definitely used a high energy weapon to do this, and they actually tore the fabric of space and time in the process. This is the same phenomenon that occurs during a nuclear explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, their reason for doing that is multifaceted. Obviously, there's a satanic influence in this, as there is in all of these other things that we've been talking about tonight. These people are not abiding by any universal law or God's laws. They're bound and determined to turn this planet into hell. And all these things, whether we're talking about corruption and voting, where people have a voice and an expression of their individual sovereignty in the eyes of God, or their national sovereignty as so-called free Americans in this free republic, you know, we have so many dichotomies here and so many hypocritical things that are going on in every aspect. They talk about health, yet they're injecting our population with toxins and poisons that are, if they don't kill us immediately, they will just cause us to be perpetually sick. This is, you know, it would be interesting to see what judges who are making these decisions own stock in the pharmaceutical companies. Or let's look at their pure trusts, which are illegal, but of which there are at least 500 in offshore accounts, trillions of dollars being bamboozled, stealing of Social Security numbers, medical records, the IDs of infants are being stolen, in the criminal impoverishment in the court systems, where they break up families, they take the kids away, they put the kids on drugs, and they're given a guardian ad litem, or they're putting them in foster homes for pedophilic abuse, and it just goes on and on and on. There, every turn, there is something satanic, something sadistic going on to our people.
Well, are you ready for the next layer?
Yes, yes, go ahead. I just had to make that comment because that's...
Well, no, here's the next layer. They're not content with that. What we were given a tip to check out a DVD called The Business of Being Born. It's quite an incredible look. It was produced by Ricky Lake, and it was and who?
Abby
and a woman named Abby Epstein, and they were rather upset with the birth process that they went through in the hospital and figured there had to be a better way. So they did an expose, the business of being born, the fact that for millions or thousands of years that people have been being born to each other through midwives or other women helping is immaterial, because the only way to be born at this time is in a hospital with a doctor, usually a male, with surgical gloves and bright lights and women's legs and stirrups and all that kind of jazz. Well, they figured that there was another way, and they just took a really, really interesting look at the whole process. Well, that DVD has prompted an awful lot of women to join the wave of women who are going to natural birth and home birth and using midwives. It's been a sliding scale for a number of decades to where almost no babies were being born at home or with midwives. Almost all of them were being born in hospitals. Well, there's a flow backwards from that now. People are going back to a more natural way of having their children. And so the AMA, on the Father's Day weekend, came up with a resolution that they decided, as a result of the backlash that they're experiencing from this film, they wanted to make it mandatory that children are born in hospitals and that midwives be, or midwifery be criminalized. Now, interestingly, going back to, I believe it was December 13th of last year, 2003, by unanimous consent, the United States Senate adopted the Genetic Testing and Saving Children Act of 2007, which provides that without their knowledge or consent, or without their consent anyway, that all children born, predictably in hospitals, would have a blood draw or a piece of their blood anyway would be taken, so that up to 200 different genetic marker tests could be performed. And then that bill was passed by voice vote in the House on the 24th of April and then signed into law on the 28th of April by President Bush. So what we have here is a new layer of what we've just been talking about, and that is that they are not content with just poisoning all the babies that get born. They've decided that it's going to be mandatory for babies to be born in hospitals so they can be genetically tested and marked and pigeonholed. And I believe that when we go back and revisit Brave New World and we see how babies were born then, we're just about one step away from having our babies being born as Epsilons or whatever the state decides they're going to be. So it's reached a whole new level, Don. I mean, our babies are not being born to us. They're being born to the state, and the state is going to manage and control, pigeonhole them, and create them in the fashion that they desire.
Let me make a real quick correction. It's the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Act of 2007, and it was signed into law April 28th. And we didn't cover it last month because we were dealing with a lot of other large articles, and so it actually made mention as a letter to the editor from our friend who helps out every month with the Idaho Observer, Ann Wilder Chamberlain, and she wrote a great letter, you know, bringing this up because it is really shocking. It has been going on. There are several states' health departments that have been collecting the information on newborns. They can get it from the court. You know, when a baby's born, you know, there's a birthing cord, and believe me, nothing gets wasted. I mean, this is, you know, part of the whole
cannibalism.
Well, I call it cannibalism, but you know, stem cell research, you know. So they take all that cord. That's part of the stem cell research stuff. They don't have to use aborted fetuses or anything like that. They have plenty of material right from the birth. I mean, I don't know anyone that takes their placenta home from a hospital birth and plants it in their yard and puts a tree over it, you know. That's done in other cultures, but certainly if you have a hospital birth, you don't take any of your genetic material home with you, and they don't waste any of it. But the whole idea is to have these data banks, and they want to determine what it would be the best vocation for you based on your genetics. And that's all the cradle-to-grave programming, so that when you go to school, they can look you up as to what your whole genetic type is and all the details about your parents and everything, and they can directly into the career that you're going to serve the New World Order best.
Yeah, there's another element of this too. If you notice, and I'm not discounting the importance of anything that you're saying. As you're speaking, I'm reminded of some things. You know, when I'm doing my research, and I'm pretty thorough, looking under every rock and inside every hole for clues that lead to a trail. And usually, I find them. I come upon some things accidentally quite often, and I found this humongous program that's occurring in Great Britain involving computers. Now, right now, everything is being computerized. Everything is being data ID'd and chipped and marked. And beyond the human body, every aspect of language is being modeled in some sort of computer program, and they're looking now at biological or biomechanical or biopsychological avenues of creating software and devices that are obviously going to be something turned upon us if we allow this to continue, where we are going to be just, if you think the Matrix is bad, This is going to be just incomprehensible, the amount of money that's being spent on this in terms of developing a completely controlled society, possibly from a master computer. I've uncovered plenty of evidence that this is going on all over the world, and there are Pakistani and Indian doctors that are involved in this, research scientists, computer programmers, and they're modeling things like speech and eye color and texture of the skin. And when I say speech, just everything every which way you could twist something inside out to produce some kind of a result and log some kind of a database of this stuff. It's really getting sick. And then you have to wonder, are they putting something, some kind of nanoparticles in these, let's say electromagnetic nanoparticles that are going to interact with these computers, where they can just push a button and control everybody by computer? I think it's moving in that direction, and that's scary for a lot of people. But all we have to do is recognize that that's what they're doing, and avoid the situations that would lead us down that path. But it's something that I will definitely look into. Right now, they're using the internet sort of as a monopoly board, and they're doing it to track people. They're logging their own people and their aliases as organized crime, and they're stealing real estate. They're stealing bank accounts. They're stealing money from trust funds. They're raiding businesses, destroying businesses, putting the owners of these businesses in prison for supposedly raiding their pension funds, when it's actually the government that's doing that and their black ops intelligence groups.
Of this is really lending to the concept that we rather began this interview with, or this show with, and that is that they are reacting for whatever reasons. There is some agenda here, and I don't even really know exactly what it is. We can attach the concept of evil to it, but there's a little bit more to it than that, because there's a lot of just basic human frailty, human nature stuff involved in all of this going forward, and they are reacting to us. They've developed this machine that requires all this cash, all these things have to keep happening, and more of this phony money has to get thrown into the system and churned through it in order for them to maintain whatever lifestyle they've decided, and to continue using us as slaves and all that kind of stuff. But we are seeing it. Their reaction to us rebelling is causing them to act in these overt ways, and I believe that they've got all sorts of really wild and science fictional type ideas that they want to utilize in order to control us, but they're falling short, and human nature is taking over. There's a lot of us and not so many of them, and I really honestly believe that their agendas are at this time highly in question. Their worlds are crumbling around them. The robots are rebelling. We're waking up, and that this nonsense, this sci-fi scenario that we're discussing now, is going to fail, and eventually we're going to be coming back to a more lucid, loving, godlike existence.
With apple pie.
And Chevrolet.
And,
and baseball.
And Bonanza. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, well, any closing thoughts? I do want to give out your web address. Are there any new surprises with the website or anything like that
the listening audience should know about? We actually completed, finally, we've had out of print, Common Sense 2, America Betrayed. And right before the Republican convention, we took to press two publications. One is Bad and Worse, Meet Ron Paul, and that was the center four pages of the January edition of the Idaho Observer. And we have the PDF on the website so people can see it. It's a great educational tool. So that's on the website and PayPal, as well as Common Sense 2. And we have a really neat cover now because, you know, I think a lot of people, when they're new to this and they're learning, you know, having a cover, you know, Common Sense 2, America Betrayed, and having Paul Revere going past the clock tower and, you know, and all of this stuff, you know, bringing back some correct history, it's a lot more uplifting to have Ron Paul, 2008, Hope for America, be part of it, and that's what we have, a Common Sense 2 cover like that. And it really, it's very inviting. So I'm still getting a lot of orders for that, and we were back ordered for about 8 months. So people are really glad to see it back in print, because most people don't really know what happened to our republic. How did it happen? And it's been incrementally done from the 1800s forward. And it's documented all in a little teeny booklet that's a great companion to what we call the Citizens Rule Book. That's a pocket constitution and has your rights and responsibilities as jurors. And, you know, so when you have these two little booklets, you know, women can carry in their purse if they have their tires being changed at Les Schwab or they're sitting in an office waiting for someone. It's nice to be able to pull out these booklets. They're very easy to read. You can read Common Sense 2 in the span of a couple hours and really get a well-rounded education. It has great suggested reading in the back. We expanded that whole list of books that are available for further research. So, yeah, I'm really happy with it. I did major thorough editing on it, and it was already really tight, so I didn't have to change very much. So I was really, really pleased to be able to present these great tools to our Ron Paul revolutionaries in Washington and Idaho.
Now, before you give the website address out, I want to make a comment, and this is for both of you. I have been reading The Observer myself for a few years, and I'm a bit biased because I write for the paper now, occasionally. When I do, it's like a monster piece. which is why I'm not, like, turning one out every month. It's just, you know, impossible, as you might imagine.
Yeah, as your editor, I really appreciate that, Don.
but thank you. as your journalist, I do, too, having you as my editor. what I wanted to say is that I've noticed, and maybe it's something that I've noticed this year more than last year. You know, my first article came out in January of 2007, the WANTA article. And I've had a few more, much more difficult to research type pieces in the paper. And we went through everything with a fine tooth comb because your standards are so high. And, basically, we've stuck by everything that I've submitted. And I noticed that your paper is really taking on a sort of a new dimension of sorts. All the articles are excellent articles, and mine aside, I'm not even talking about my work. I'm just talking about the other writers. But you have it seems to me that you have gotten more creative in how you present things, especially on the front page. You've taken some of the ideas, like in the genealogy things, and you've tried to make them visually understandable to the reader, because some of these are really complex issues. And I have to tell you, genealogical research is not my cup of tea in terms of what I like to do. I feel that I'm good at it, but if I had a choice, I would be writing about something much more inspiring than exposing all this corruption. Yet you are able to assist me in presenting everything in a very logical and easily readable fashion, which I'm appreciative of, but I notice that with everything that's in the paper. I don't know how much you have to work on other writers' stuff.
I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I think you'd be really surprised, and that's why I gave you so many compliments today, Don, is because I'm seeing your writing. I mean, it's like you're a good learner. You know, not everyone learns after they've written a couple pieces. They don't, you know, look back and read it for the changes that Don and I have made. And Don usually makes, you know, all the initial changes, and they're all really good because, you know, I mean, he's been writing for a long time, and he's trained in that way. And but you're a good learner. I mean, you saw what happened with the Scherf piece, and you incorporated a lot of that in your style. And plus, you know, I really believe once you do radio and you become conversant, you start talking to people, you do start talking to an audience. And that's half of it, is knowing your audience and writing to an audience. There's a lot of people that are out there that they think they're going to be great writers, but they're writing to themselves. And they don't, you know, really identify the audience that they're writing to. They just, you know, it's like they want to take their information that they want to communicate and hit it over some with a 2x4, and that's really not the way to get information out. You have to identify your audience and use some good psychology, and you're definitely doing that, Don.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I wanted to make that compliment, you know, to both of you, because I see you are metamorphosizing into something grander yourselves. And I'm constantly promoting your paper on this show and on the TNT hour that I do on Wednesdays on BBS Radio, which is a news program, kind of like the Idaho Observer. I might talk about one topic, or I might talk about 20 topics. But none of it is what you hear in mainstream, unless I'm tearing apart what you hear on mainstream and exposing it for what it really is. That makes the powers that be rather uncomfortable, and I hear nothing but compliments from people. And you know, I get a lot of email, or at least a certain amount of email. It's usually positive from your readers wanting to share information with me or delve a little bit deeper into a topic that we've collaborated on, and I hear nothing but good things from people I talk to. They've been reading the paper since it's been out, and they would feel lost without it. Yet every episode or every edition is like a new episode in a movie or in a serial for them.
Well, I really appreciate that because actually we're all growing and learning. We have this incredible blessing of being a journal for a demographic of Americans who are open-minded and they're growing and they're learning apace with us. So really all we're doing, the reason why we're popular in our little niche is because we're all growing and learning apace with one another, and we're just putting to words what is going on in their minds. We're also finding the things out there in the 30-day cycle that's important to us, and so we know it's important to them too. And when you say episode, it's interesting that you would say that because each month is conceptual in that there's a theme that runs through it. And that's just because each month, as we're growing and learning and the world is unfolding around us, things are conceptual. The issues that we're dealing with, they slightly mold and meld and they move on through. And it's so much easier to understand what's happening to us if you put it in a thematic sense and then run that thread through the whole paper. And then all of a sudden, all of these things do begin to make sense. It's not all confusing. It's not all just a jumble of mass here in the information age. It's logical. It's cogent, and it's something that we can all continue to grow and learn from. And I'm, like I said, I feel blessed that we have the readership that we do, and honored that they respect what we're doing, and just absolutely pleased as possibly can be, because we're all interacting together. And bringing this thing forward, and now that we have 17 months with the Ron Paul Revolution under our belts, I'm just thrilled at the progress that we're all making.
Yes, I wanted to point that out, and it hasn't hurt my website hits to have my articles on, and basically it's like an Idaho Observer page, really. Someone can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and I just have what I published in your paper there. And so people can kind of see how I have moved from topic to topic. And really, it's turning out to look like a book, you know.
What I really hope, too, is that something that I feel very, very, very closely to my heart is that what you've done here is that you've hit on a model of research that reveals things that have been heretofore unrevealable to us. You've gone in and found the way that we can find out who these people who ascend to positions of power and authority in this country really are. And it just completely blows out of the water this mantra, this fraud that we're introduced to in grade school, that America is the freest country in the world and anybody can be president. It's absolute nonsense. And you're demonstrating that. And I, in fact, a friend of mine today or yesterday just mentioned, geez, you know, I wonder if Nikoloff would be interested in doing a genealogical study of, say, the Rockefellers.
Begun one.
I would imagine. But think of all the different people and families in this country that we think we know, we think we understand, because they popped up on the scene 150 years ago, and who are they really? Where did they come from? And if the Scherfs, the Bushes, and the McCanns, are of any relevance to the overall picture, I think that we can have a completely different understanding of the world we live in based upon the people who have been shaping it for, well, since the birth of this country.
Well, those names, you know, Rockefeller, for instance, Rothschild has been a more secret kind of name.
Sure.
It's been more Neapolitan, if you want to call it that. Multi-flavored with the pistachios in there, you know, and the skins still on the pistachios. Every turn I run into the Rockefellers, every turn where I'm looking at some dot connecting between something happening in Poland and Germany, or Germany and the West Indies, there's the Rockefellers are there, or Japan, or it really doesn't matter what country you're talking about, they're everywhere. Or and there were other names like that too. Maybe just a study on the whole Illuminati bloodlines would be really interesting too. But definitely, now they're all shaking in their boots because I said that. I've started something just on the basis of compiling so much information. I can connect them to Tesla, and I can connect them to the banks and the railroads and the shipping companies and politics and secret genetics studies, eugenics, let's say, you know, taking place in Hungary and in foreign countries. And you ask yourself, what are these people doing? What is their lust in life? What is their real lust besides money? Do they have anything that they really care about? Do they have any feelings or any conscience or any morals or scruples? And I think the answer is a unanimous no to all of those questions. They don't really.
So you mean even the mantra "there's honor among thieves" is a fraud?
Oh, there's right now the thieves are killing each other in Washington and in Europe. I mean, just over Watergate, there's got to be 3,000-4,000 people that have been killed, and now they're uncovering the money. They're finding the loot. They're finding where it's stashed, including what they stole from the central bank in Iraq when they raided that country a second time. And again, the same family, you know. Oh, it's no. There might be a little bit of honor among thieves, but you know, that's just your honor. That's about it. Well, let's see. What web address do you prefer giving out?
I know it's the same one that it's always been, idaho-observer.com.
Okay, and they get a redirect on that, right? To
right, yeah. Originally, the site was proliberty.com/observer, but if you just go to idaho-observer.com, it'll pop right up. And you can always punch into Google or your favorite search engine, Idaho Observer, and we're it. So you can spend the next couple months of your life looking at the archives that we've put up there over the last, now we're in our 12th year.
Yeah, great. Congratulations. I just completed my first year of Evident Footprints last week. Actually, I began on June 19th of 2007. So I'm a little over 1 year old on this show.
Hey, well, although congratulations. That's a milestone in itself.
Yeah, thanks. And it's nice to have you back on here again. Now, we've got some more stuff coming out. We've got the second part of the McCain saga, the conclusion. Coming out tomorrow, I guess, tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
And I did a short piece on Obama, which is basically informing everyone to be looking for next month's edition of the Idaho Observer, where we'll have probably the whole piece in there, right? Fingers are crossed.
I don't know. It depends on how wordy you get.
Well, there's a lot of data, and it has to be presented. So
no, I'm game on that. It's you can see how the whole country is spinning around to embrace this made man, this guy that popped out of nowhere, has no experience, and isn't even all that gifted that I can see, and yet he's been made a household name, and he's basically already been given the keys to the White House. It's really a bizarre set of circumstances. A lot of people are completely fooled by him, even though it's right out on Front Street who his handlers are and who his friends are in the corporate world. It's just amazing that people can be fooled by this kind of thin veil of statesmanship over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. What does your intuition tell you, knowing what I have uncovered, even though we're not going to talk about it tonight? Do you see anyone coming to grips with the reality of some of the information that'll be coming out?
Oh, lots of people are, but it's process. And like I said, I have been very, very encouraged, having been an activist now for 15 years and always being on the reaction side of what's happening, and then suddenly seeing the establishment, whether it's the party politicians or organized medicine or other factions within the corporate universe, reacting to us. And a guy told me years ago, one of my mentors, he said, "Don, whenever you get a man in a reactionary position, you've already won." And so with that, I'm going forward with more optimism than I have really at all in the last 15 years, because I can see that they are reacting all around us. And so long as we maintain our honor and our, in our case, editorial intent remains pure, and our aspirations are to secure the Republic and to restore the Republic and to better the world around us for having lived in it, I am absolutely convinced that this nowhere place that the bad people are taking us is going to fall away, and that we are actually going to reclaim some dignity here.
But it's really important that people do get involved in their communities. I mean, really, the biggest, quote, safety is sharing the truth and being well-networked and caring for your neighbor. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't even know their neighbors. I mean, you know, people should think about having a neighborhood cookout, or, you know, invite people over for a potluck. But get to know people and make sure that they know that if they're in trouble or someone's hurt or their car is broken down, that you can be there and help, and vice versa. But people need to start networking their communities, their precincts, their counties. I mean, seriously, because the most horrible stories that we get in our office of even forced vaccination, it's usually people that have isolated themselves and trusted experts. And once they go down that path, you know, it can be rather brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I would have to say, that the greatest lesson that we've learned in the last year plus now that we've been involved in what is justifiably called the Ron Paul Revolution is, a year ago, it was an impossibility that he would even have a chance at the White House because there was no way to get delegates. But what's happened then is people have risen to the challenge. They've shirked off their absolute revulsion for party politics, because it's real disgusting, and the people we didn't like in high school are the ones that are doing it. But we got involved, we got elected to precinct committeeman posts, and we've reversed the trend. If you view us as the source, I mean, when I say us, that's you, me, and our neighbors, as the source of the political process, the source has been poisoned, and that's us. And so everything that we're looking at, from our county governments on up to the state and the White House and beyond, are symptoms of a malaise that began in the mirror decades ago. And if we recognize that, and then we decide that we're going to change the process at the source, then we've identified where we need to begin, and 20% of the people in precinct committeemen in this country right now are Ron Paul supporters. These are people who are principled enough to try to reverse the trend at the local level, at the neighborhood level. And that's justifiably and appropriately where it needs to begin. That's the process that has begun. And I can say with absolute certainty that the infrastructure for change in this country is currently in place. And now it's up to us to become part of that process, support that process, and nurture that process along, and then watch the headwaters suddenly become unpoisoned, purified, and watch the marvelous things flow upward from down here where we live.
Well, that statement makes me want to go see a movie tomorrow.
Oh, which one? They Live?
Now, if you want to see an uplifting movie, get The Real Dirt on Farmer John.
Really?
I'm not renting
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
You know? Oh, yeah. You're way too pessimistic. We've been right in the middle of this all this time, and we're seeing the magic. I mean, we're right here in the gutter, if you will, watching people transform. And I'm talking about people who have been run over by the system and have given up on it. We're watching them transform. We're watching people who are party faithful, committed to the machine, we're watching them transform. We're seeing subtle little changes in the way people think about foundational issues. That's transformation, Don. And so what we're actually witnessing, quite possibly, is a real clash between freedom and fascism. They are reacting to us. We're becoming more numerous. The more overtly they respond to us, the more people realize what's going on, and the more they come over to our side. So I'm absolutely waxing optimistic at this time. Well, for you know this
well,
last 15
people
minutes.
People are networking to grow their food. I mean, the real dirt on Farmer John. I mean, I don't want to tell you the whole ending, but I mean, it's the real true story of a farmer in Illinois, and it's very powerful. I mean, it's a tearjerker in places, and the ending is just beautiful, and it just goes to show that when you're doing the right thing and you're following your heart and your passion, the people come out of the woodwork to support you. I mean, he totally lost his farm and saved it by people coming out of the woodwork and forming a whole cooperative. And they're springing up all over the country where people want to be in charge of their food supply. They don't want government poison food, and so people are actually taking a portion of their hard-earned money to purchase pieces of land that are managed by, you know, an organic farmer, and then they participate in the harvest together, and it's a whole community. I mean, I think he's dealing with over 360 families that have pooled their resources to collectively own a farm.
Well, one of my sponsors is hempusa.org, and I'm going to see if Tom James can get me a box of hemp Kleenexes, and I'll go see that. I'll take your recommendation
on that. Well, it's on Netflix, too. It's a Netflix thing, but it is really excellent. My friend turned me on to it, and we're all like, this is a must-view. So I'm telling everyone. That and The Business of Being Born, those are really important. But I'm really not a movie watcher, and so for me to even recommend a movie, it's got to be good, because if I see a bad movie, it's just like I'm done for about 3 months. I'll just go to a book.
Well, I go to them very seldom. However, Don just made me feel so uplifted that I thought it's time to celebrate. You know, it's either that or go out and buy a bottle of wine. So
well...
I do both.
See something uplifting.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, I want to have you back again next month. I'm just, you know, at least one time. Maybe we could do something either just before the paper comes out or right after it comes out. But I'd be interested in what transpires between now and that time next month.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe you can come
back.
Well,
we always have plenty to talk about. We're kind of the we're a stopping point for the world as it unfolds. So I'm happy to talk to you anytime it's convenient for you.
Right.
Okay.
And it's been a great show, Don. I just want to add that it's really important that we never give up hope. You know, we have a saying, no matter what. That was an Alan Yurko thing that Don adopted. That you keep persisting with what is right and just and honorable, and you always communicate in a loving manner to those around you, and it spreads. It absolutely does. Your intention to make the world a better place will spread, and it is. We are absolutely winning.
Well, so I'll take that
faith.
Under advisement. I agree with you. In fact, you know where my heart is in all this, and I just see one outcome, and we may not see the light at the end of the tunnel yet, but we know there is an end to the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it starts out with one point of light, and that light just keeps expanding.
Expanding.
We're on that wave right now, so I just want to encourage people to jump on board.
Well, Ingrid Castle and Don Harkins, thank you so much for being on Evident Footprints. I want to encourage the listeners to give you a call at area code 208-255-2307. get signed up for a subscription, monthly subscription to the Idaho Observer. It's very reasonably priced, and you'll be doing a great thing for yourselves and for your country. And with that, again, I want to say good night to you both. Thank you so much.
Well, good night, Don. Thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thanks, Don.
Okay,
great,
you take
articles,
care.
By the way.
Thank you.
Okay,
and Don, you owe me an article, okay? So
we can manage. I write all the time. I can write for you too. What the heck?
No, just send me mine, okay?
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll probably get that off to you tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our guests this evening, Ingrid Castle and Don Harkins, publishers and editors at the Idaho Observer. And they are my dear friends and mentors of sort. And we will have them back again next month. In the meantime, join me tomorrow night on BBS Radio at Evident Footprints. We have a special guest, Ken Adachi. He's got one of the most hopping websites in the world. Last week, he got something like close to 200,000 hits on his website in one day. And you're going to want to hear what he has to share tomorrow evening. So, Ken Adachi tomorrow night. In the meantime, thanks to Donald Newsom, executive producer of Evident Footprints, Seth Hendrick and Marcella on the sound in the studio. Thank you very much. Everyone have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.